What is up, beautiful people? Welcome back to Small Talk with Sid, the podcast with your host, Cindy Matone. And let's get right into it. This week is all about money, baby. And let's be real, like, money is a weird topic to talk about in society. There's a stigma around it. Like, you could be talking with like some of your closest friends, but like the moment that like finances and stuff comes up, like, people shy away from those conversations. And the problem with this stigma is that because as a society, we're not having open dialogues and conversations, people aren't being educated on how to make right decisions. And even past society, some people didn't have that education in the homes they grew up in. Like, maybe mom and dad or whoever wasn't the best example of how to save properly or spend or things like that. And so now we're in our 20s and we might be picking up bad habits that we learned growing up, or we're trying to figure it out as we go. And it's really hard. And on top of that, the economy that we're in is like craziness. There's so much that we're dealing with. And, you know, obviously most of us are in positions where like we're not ready to buy homes anytime soon. And we're trying to pay off student debt and credit card debt and all these other things. And it's just like a lot of pressure. And it's like, where do we go from here? And I think there's also a lot of shame, right? I think people, the reason people don't like talking about it is because there's a lot of shame around debt and feeling stuck and isolated. And almost brings you into this like deep, dark hole that like you don't know how to get out of. And so anyone that's in that position or has anxiety about money in general, I want you to take a deep breath, because we're going to get through it. And today's guest is like a genius when it comes to this stuff. And she gives you like step-by-step play of what she's experienced in her life. And yeah, but guys, I know exactly what I mean. I'm even guilty of myself in my own life of trying to keep up with like certain trends or vacations or restaurants and all that. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm all for a good time. But the problem is that I think sometimes I lack the structure that I needed in my life in order to build for my future. And I think it's really important to be having these conversations. So today's episode is like perfect timing for me, and I think also society, where we're at right now in general, when the economy. So let me introduce you to today's guest, and then we're going to get into the episode. So here we go. Okay, guys. So this week I'm chatting with wealth strategy and business mentor, Hannah Koenig. Today, she's a multiple six-figure entrepreneur and Forbes Coaches Council member, but her success most certainly comes with a story. Hannah shares with us how her family grew up on food stamps below the poverty line. As a kid, the only thing she understood about money was that her family didn't have it. Her fear of finances carried into her 20s, where she found herself facing eviction, mountains of debt, and the consequences of just about every financial mistake a person can make. After becoming an entrepreneur, she realized that earning more was only a fraction of the equation. It was then that she committed to fully transforming her relationship with money. In a few short years, Hannah went from a negative net worth to becoming an investor, owning multiple properties, and building tangible wealth. Her own journey of financial liberation catalyzed the work she does today. In this episode, we dive into how to escape the trauma and shame associated with debt, the first place to start when you're trying to get rid of debt, the importance of emergency funds, all things credit card related, how to generate wealth, where to invest, and so, so much more. There is something that everyone listening can take away from this episode. So with that, I suggest you tune in. And now let's meet Hannah. Hey guys, I'm with Hannah now, and we're just saying how her background is so much better set up than mine. It is amazing because she's been recording all week and very chic, by the way. Have you been doing a lot of interviews, or what's going on?
Yeah. We do a huge event, a huge wealth event in October. So I've been having conversations all week with some of like the best female leaders in the financial space.
Amazing. So good. How's your week going so far?
Good. Busy, full of like inspiration. I'm learning things. I always go into these thinking, you know, I know, and I'm always blown away. And so I can't wait. I can't wait to share them. We can share more about that later, but
yeah, amazing. And also I've been saying too, I've been loving, like, I'm excited for the fall season. I was kind of like over summer, so I'm like ready for like that new change, a new shift in energy. So I feel like you're feeling it too. But I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Same. I did a late vacation on the beach. And the first couple of days I was back, I was so sad. I was like, I'm not ready. And then yesterday I had a really cute leather jacket and I was wearing I was like, oh yeah. Okay. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I miss dressing up a little bit, especially like with the whole pandemic and everything. I'm just like kind of ready to get back into like, you know, that fall spirit. But with that said, when I was reading about you and I did my little research, you have, I mean, a story that I think is going to definitely resonate with a lot of people, but also something that this is exactly what people are going through right now in this current state of the economy that we're in, when we're talking about being in debt and how to get out of it and like the anxiety that people feel. So I think this is an episode that, like, no matter where you're at in your financial journey, like something, everybody can take a little something away from it. But with that said though, I really want to like backtrack to like your kind of like your childhood experience and what was happening during your teen years. And we'll start there.
Yeah. So I grew up in Northern Wisconsin. My father was a disabled veteran. In my early childhood, my mom didn't work. We were on food stamps. We were definitely below the poverty line. And not only did we not have money, I had really, really, really bad modeling on how to be in relationship with money. Like, my dad would get his pension check at the beginning of every month. And by, you know, somewhere between like the fifth and the eighth of the month, he had no money. And I remember him like borrowing money from my piggy bank to go buy cigarettes and borrowing money from friends. And it just being complete chaos. And that really impacted me in my late teens, early 20s. Like, after I graduated high school, I was trying to live on my own and figure out how to afford to go to school and afford to adult. And I was so bad with money. I mean, I have made almost every financial mistake a person can make. Mm. I have had to get a car out of repossession. I have been evicted from apartments twice. I could not tell you how many times I'd overdrafted in my bank account. I actually knew exactly how much I could overdraft. And I've written bad checks. At one point I took out like a car title loan. And some of it was because like I didn't have a ton of money, but a lot of it was because I just didn't know how to be in relationship with money. And for the longest time, money was this thing that I was just afraid of. And it felt like this giant shame secret. And I had debt and collections and a terrible credit score. And it felt like this thing that you were supposed to know how to do, but you also weren't supposed to talk about. Yeah. And then the education that was available, a lot of it, the mainstream financial education was like, well, it's because you're impulsive and you buy expensive lattes. And it felt daunting. And it took, you know, a little over 5 years ago, I didn't know my credit score. And I found entrepreneurship, and I thought creating more money was going to be the thing. I just needed more money. That was the problem. Yeah. And then I created more money. I created a lot more money, and I started to see some of those same patterns play out, not in the same level of severity. It wasn't as extreme, but I was still afraid of money, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was still, you know, $40,000 in the bank account, 6 months worth of scheduled reoccurring revenue coming into my business. And I was terrified, almost even more afraid, because I actually knew who I was without money. I didn't know who I was or how to be with money. And that's when I was like, oh, but it's time to stop blaming my parents. It's time to get my shit together. And I dove into financial literacy. And what blew my mind once I found a rhythm with that was how easy money is, how liberating it felt, how quickly you can build wealth. And in the course of, you know, 2021 is when I really committed with systems in place. And in that year, I paid off all debt except a mortgage. So no car payment, no credit card, no financed furniture, no nothing. I paid myself a six-figure salary. I also, in addition to that, saved six figures. I padded an emergency fund for my personal life and for my business. I maxed out 2 years worth of a retirement account. And in addition to that, set up a retirement account in my business. Like, it was just so surprising to me that it wasn't like it for so long. It had been mysterious for so long. I had been afraid of it. And it was just, I was shocked.
You said a word in there. You said the word shame. And I was going to bring this up because I think whether any cycle that you're in, whether it's something with like, you know, putting yourself in debt or an addiction of some sort, there's the root cause of it is that there is something you are trying to fill, as in some void you're trying to fill in your life. And when you were a teenager, were you living like almost like a secret life? Like, no one really knew what was going on behind the scenes, or like what was the realization you came to for why you continued to be in this cycle of debt?
Yeah. So in my early 20s, I just thought I didn't have enough money. I mean, I knew I was bad with money. I felt like I was bad with money. I felt ashamed. At that time, I blamed, you know, on the surface level, right? I blame my parents. I grew up poor. I blamed them for, you know, teaching me really bad habits or not teaching me anything at all. And I blamed money, right? I thought money was the issue. I didn't want to look at myself, but on a deeper level, and this happens, you know, I work with women predominantly, and this tends to happen. And this is what shame does, right? But for women, especially, or honestly, people who just don't identify as like a white man, mm-hmm. we have a different way of responding to our mistakes. And we tend to be, so for any time you add on a layer of marginalized identity, this only compounds. We tend to take mistakes we've made or difficult situations, instead of saying like, I made a mistake, we think and we feel I am a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of like, I made a mistake with money, right? I felt like I am bad with money, right? Like I cannot trust myself with money.
And I think what happens too is people also begin to kind of create this storyline where like, this is what I deserve. This is who I am. This is the background I came from. And then you begin to identify with that. And then, like you said, it kind of like compounds and grows further and further, where it actually ends up becoming your reality. Breaking out of that is hard. And so when you're in your 20s, like, do you remember the emotions associated? Like, when was it for you that it clicked where it's like, this is not my story and it doesn't have to be where I'm going? Like more the emotional, psychological aspect of it.
Yeah. I think when I discovered entrepreneurship, I mean, I had already been working for myself. I ran women's leadership trainings in Bali. Mm-hmm. I taught yoga. I did workshops. So I was kind of already piecing together, making money for myself. But when I decided to really like to start a business and commit to that, I saw entrepreneurship kind of as a way out. And, mm-hmm. and so that first stage was more about self-empowerment. What was about understanding that I could generate the type of money I wanted to be in relationship with, because I don't have a college degree. And because I thought, oh, money is, if I have more of it, like everything will be good. So I was just like, how can I be in relationship with more money? And entrepreneurship seemed like a path to that for me. Where I could create the kind of salary that nobody wanted to pay me. Yeah. And so that was the beginning of that, was really like stepping into empowering myself to earn. And through that process, you know, then when I started to earn, it was like, I also then got to see, because money is an amplifier, right? It's a resource. So when we have an abundance of a resource, it makes things more apparent, right? It mm-hmm. started to shine a light on the ways I was showing up with money that were problematic, right? And at a different degree. So it wasn't now I was like, you know, gonna miss a payment on my mortgage or something like that. It was more like, why am I hoarding money in a savings account and keeping a full balance on my credit card? Mm-hmm. Right. And why, when I think about, I could pay the whole credit card off right now. When I think about paying it off, do I feel terrified and sick to my stomach?
Yeah.
Why does, when something go wrong with a client, I get nervous, like I'm not going to be able to eat tomorrow. Like it didn't make sense. And that's when I really, and that's, you know, how I discovered, I teach financial intimacy. And that's how I learned that process through really teasing apart my own journey.
Yeah. And also too, the fact that like, it sounds like you have such a strong community around you. I think like, and again, I know it's a little cliche, but talking mm-hmm. about it with people and being open about your experiences, like you'll realize like there are ways out of this. And speaking of ways out of this, I feel like when I listen to podcasts, sometimes like people will be like, okay, like I was an X and I got to Y, and people are like, okay, but how, like, how did that happen? Because I'm sure there are people listening right now that they're in tons of debt and they feel like when it rains, it pours and everything's going wrong. And they're hearing this and they're like, okay, well, it sounds great, but like what actually, like the steps that, what did she take? So what were like the first initial steps when like you're getting evicted and like you're in all this credit card debt and whatever else is going on? Like where did you start basically?
Yeah. So I didn't start at that time. Like mm-hmm. I got evicted. I had things sent to collections and I just ignored them mm-hmm. for years. And then it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago, really like the beginning of 2017, that I started to take steps. But most importantly, what's important for people to understand who are in that place right now, before we even get into the technical of like budgeting or any of those systems and processes, is that money is very emotional and psychological. So if we're just creating a budget, that's a Band-Aid, right? And what happens often is, you know, it's the same with like a workout goal that's rooted in who you think you should be, not who you are. It's only sustainable for a little bit. So what we first need to address, and this is, you know, in the process of creating financial intimacy and getting naked with your money is creating space for emotional safety. And if you can have a support person, but starting to look at how I feel and what's not working for me, just on a mental, emotional level, and then creating a vision for what I want moving forward. If you don't have a vision, you're not anchored to anything. So, right. Like that vision might be, I'm not saying the vision is, you know, you hang out with Beyonce on the Freedom Yacht, but like that vision might be, I don't want to feel nervous or scared around money. And I want to know what's going on with my money. And I don't want to have this much debt. Or maybe that vision is like, I want to buy a house. Or maybe that vision is, I want the ability to quit my job and start a business. So crafting that vision, and then from there, taking an inventory. Because if we don't have a clear picture of what's going on, you can't really move forward.
And I think that's what people are terrified of, is that part. It's like,
that is the hardest part. It's kind of like jumping into the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, I can't see what's on the bottom. And it, in my mind, it's 10 times colder than it actually is. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, whether you need to inch your way in or you want to dive in head first, looking at what's there is really illuminating, because like, at least, you know, and it's so scary to do because it's like monster under the bed or that thing in your corner, that looks like a monster when the lights are off, and then you turn on the light and it's just a pile of clothes mm-hmm. on a chair, right? We all have that chair. Mm-hmm. And from there you can start to take those steps, but like first and foremost, it's like not making yourself wrong for that. And then having an awareness of where you want to go, but also having an awareness of how you're showing up or what stories you're telling yourself that are actually supporting where you're stuck and not where you want to be going.
Yeah. And you said a few things. Number one, like, it's always scarier in your mind than what it actually is. Like when you actually look at it, you're like, okay, it wasn't that bad. And even if it is that bad, there's also like community around you. Like you do it with somebody, like you don't have to do it alone in a room by yourself. Like you bring support around you. And I remember this therapist, she gave a really great analogy of like trauma. And she said like, what we do with like our clients is like their trauma, it's like crumpled up pieces of paper. And then what we do is we kind of like unfold that paper and then we place it in a neat pile. And I feel like it's the same thing here, where it's like, it seems like it's all crazy, but once you've got it organized, like even within your brain psychologically, like having it organized just puts an ease to the situation. And I think that's kind of what you're bringing up here.
Yeah. Creating safety. And it's the same, you know, with financial trauma, what we see, if you look at any of the research around financial trauma, is like scarcity impacts our bandwidth, right? Our cognitive bandwidth. So when we're in extreme financial scarcity or extreme fear, when we're having a traumatic response, we are not thinking in the same logical cognitive way, right? So understanding that like financial trauma and strain does impact your bandwidth, and taking it slow, and then figuring out, you know, how can I create some safety and get some support around implementing these systems? And there's a lot of great free resources out there. You're also totally welcome to message me, and I have an amazing,
we'll put it in the description. Free absolutely. Event,
free event coming up, called the Lead Well Summit as well. That's a wealth and financial event, but like you don't have to do it alone. And also I think it's important to know that you're not too far gone. You know, I have worked with people who had, you know, $80,000 to $100,000 in debt and were considering filing for bankruptcy. That was actually that they were able to clear, you know, in a year and a half. And just thinking that it's a life sentence. And that's rarely the case.
And there's also a lot of loopholes with that kind of stuff too. Like when you have that much debt, there's a lot of the times where like the IRS is willing to settle with you. And like, there's things that exist like that. So it's just about kind of like doing your research and having those conversations. And there are definitely ways out of it. And just on a more general note, I know for me, like whenever, not necessarily financial, but like when I'm experiencing like major anxiety, me just like writing things down on paper, like physically writing it down and kind of seeing where my life is at, that alone just gives me a piece so I can like actually see it on paper. So I feel like anyone that's kind of going through that, just sometimes like putting your thoughts to pen, it really does help ease the situation. It doesn't take it away, but for me, it helps a little bit.
Now, planning is a form of processing, right?
Yeah.
That is cognitive emotional processing.
Yeah. So let's move on to like, so paying off debt. So like when someone is in tons of debt, or even somebody that's just kind of like, now they're in the process of maybe they're growing their debt a little bit, like how exactly do you pay it off? And what are the first things that you do pay off? Is it student loans, the credit card debt? Like I'll let you elaborate.
So before you even jump into paying off debt, what I recommend is creating at least a small emergency fund. And here's why. Emergencies happen, right? Like your cat might decide to jump off of, you know, your third story apartment window or whatever. And that's your freaking cat and you love her. And no, it was not in your budget.
Everyone's checking on their cats right now.
Right? Yeah. Like these things happen. There's one time growing up where my dog ate a beach towel and it was, you know, like $3,000 worth of emergency surgery. And my mom, single mom of four, is, you know, panicking. So I first recommend putting away, you know, even a minimum, you know, 2 to 3 months of living expenses, just bare bones, depending on your debt. But optimally like 3 to 6 months of your basic expenses. And that's, we call those like fixed expenses or like the big three in the financial world. It's food, housing and transportation, right? Your major expenses and your minimum debt payments. Cause I don't recommend getting stuff moved into collections if you still have, you know, an active relationship with that creditor. So that's first. And do that before debt, because what happens when, you know, again, so much of our relationship to money is psychological, it's mental, emotional. When you start paying off debt, it feels like you're making progress. And that's a dopamine hit, right? That's a positive experience with money. It's reinforcing and building trust with yourself. It feels good. And then if a setback happens and then you have to go into debt to take care of that setback, it will feel like this revolving door where you just never can get out of that experience. And that's really defeating. So I recommend putting a little bit of money away for emergencies.
Like every paycheck, like have a percentage that you like dedicate to putting away.
Right. Yeah. So your fixed expenses, your minimum debt payments, and then build up, you know, a small emergency fund, even, and if you have a lot of, and we'll talk about this, right. Also remember, like we have to pay attention to the type of debt you have. But, you know, even enough that if something happens that money is there, so you can continue to show up for your commitment to paying off debt as you were. Now, I do want to point out that not all debt is bad, and some debt, it's just that some debt is more expensive than other debt, right? Some places it costs more, a lot more to borrow money than others. So for example, credit cards are, you know, on the low end, maybe like a 16% interest rate. On the high end, you're talking like 27%, maybe close to 30%. And this is compound interest. So when you're investing, compound interest is amazing. It's like popcorn, right? Like once it starts popping, it exponentially grows. Well, I like to think about compound interest with your debt like gremlins. Like you put water on them, they start multiplying. You cannot control the situation. And it becomes very expensive. So figure out, you know, your interest rate on your debts. Credit card debt is typically some of the most expensive debt. Sometimes, you know, personal loans can also be payday loans, incredibly expensive. It's like price gouging level debt. However, student loans with a super low interest rate, great. Or a mortgage with a lower interest rate that's say, you know, 5 or 6%, not as bad. Sometimes your interest rate on a car loan is not nearly as high as it would be on your credit card. So I like there are two methods. There's obviously, you know, paying down the most expensive debt, but there's another method called the snowball method. And statistically this works better, which is just going through and paying off your cheapest debt first and working backwards. And the reason that people like this and that it works really well for people is because it's really gratifying to cross things off the list. Hmm. So personal finance is personal, and you have to find what's going to work for you. And so there's not a right or wrong way to do this, and not all debt is bad, but it's finding out, you know, what is the debt that's really holding you back, or what is the way of paying off debt that's going to support you, right? Like, that's going to be the most effective for you. So there are a lot of different ways you can do that. And it's like paying attention to like, what is the debt? Because sometimes it's just, we feel guilt and shame for having it. Like, it's this thing we're not supposed to have, but you know, your student loans are your education. Sometimes there are programs with an employer where there's support for that, or, you know, the current administration just passing some student debt relief.
Right.
So it's just kind of destigmatizing it and then figuring out what is the debt that needs to go, or what is the debt that I can take care of right now, and committing to a process. So yeah. E-fund, then we can talk about debt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. When it comes to credit card debt specifically, and I heard this one time that let's say you have multiple credit cards, you pay off the one, because I think a lot of the times people, like, I don't know, let's say you have a check for $500 and you want to pay off all your credit card debt, they'll almost break it up $250 to each credit card. But I heard it's better to pay the minimum of the one that has the lesser interest rate and then pay the one, give more money to the one with the higher interest rate. And I think that's the better way to go.
Yeah. So if we're talking about your credit score, you know, a lot of people think like under 30% is good, but actually it's when you hit 30% credit card usage that actually flags agencies, and it looks like, oh, okay, this person is starting to spend at that upper limit. So really you should be keeping your purchases at like 10%.
Yeah,
And you're going to see higher credit, but if you can pay off more on one, that can be really beneficial because it will show, you know, that account with lower usage. However, like the credit, you know, Credit Karma, the credit agencies, you're going to see, and you can open a Credit Karma account for free and just kind of look. They're looking at your overall debt in general. But it's really, I think it's more, what's more important is like, can you commit to, what can you commit to? Right. So it's not like right or wrong to do it one way, but it's like, which is the way that's going to feel better for me. And for me, when I was paying off debt, it was easier to go through and do one at a time, just because it was like, oh, there's one fewer thing on the list, one less thing for me to manage, one less, you know, one less thing that's taking my mental, emotional, energetic bandwidth.
Yeah. When it comes to personal spending, and let's say, you know, you're in a place now where maybe like you're not in like the worst financial place in the world, but when it comes to personal spending, like what's kind of like a rule of thumb that you use when, like, when can I use my credit card and when can't I? And I've heard things before, like people, if I can't pay right now with my debit card, I'm not going to buy it at all. So like, what kind of rule of thumb do you use when it comes to spending?
Yeah. So I personally now, like, I don't even use my debit card because it's not building me credit. It's not giving me rewards points. I use my credit cards for everything, but I don't make purchases on my credit card that I can't pay in full anymore. Like I just don't. Yeah. And that's because if I were going to borrow money, I would look for a way to borrow money that was much less expensive. Right. I'm not interested in paying credit cards, credit card companies. I am interested in them paying me. So, so that's what I tend to focus on is like, can we get you to a place where the purchases you're making on credit cards are purchases that you can make? You're living well within your means, because ultimately, like, the conversation, you know, I want to have with women around building wealth is like, okay, here's how we can clean it up. But like, where do we go beyond the debt?
Who do you get to like the sacrifices you have to make as well? Yeah.
Right. Cause like money can become, and my hope is that for anyone listening, that eventually money becomes the reason that you get to say yes to the things that matter to you most, right? Like money is your ride or die, who, you know, you jump in the car and you're like, I want to go here. I want to do this. And they're like, let's ride.
Yeah.
Right. Like money can be that. And so ultimately, like, hopefully credit can become this tool that you use. And there are options, you know, for example, now there are a lot of options like Klarna and Afterpay, where you can pay over time, which interest-free, right? Interest-free if you pay within a certain amount of time.
Also could be dangerous, but yes.
Also can be dangerous.
Yes.
Sounds really good. And it can be. And I've used those tools. I remember using that early on in my business, like to go to a conference that I didn't have cash for that ticket. However, what happens if you miss a payment? What happens with that is they will charge you interest on all of it. And it's usually pretty high interest.
Yeah.
Right. So understanding those tools, but then if possible, can you not spend money that you don't have?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And again, you brought up so many good points, but I think now switching gears a little bit, talking about like, now we're in a place where like debt isn't a good place and we're building our wealth and investing. So where does one start when you're accumulating wealth? How are you investing properly?
Yeah. So, I like to think about it like first,
and you said tangible, wealth, by the way, we can touch on that too.
Wealth. Yeah. Yeah. Because I, at least, you know, I've been a business coach, you know, I've helped a lot of entrepreneurs build seven-figure businesses over the last 4.5 years. And in a lot of those spaces, people confuse wealth with cash flow. People confuse wealth with having a lot of nice things. But I will tell you that having a really shiny watch and really great shoes and a really great car often doesn't feel good when there's no money in the bank. At least for me, it doesn't. And mm-hmm. there's also no shame. There's no shame in having nice things. There's no shame in having debt. And when I talk about tangible wealth, I'm not talking about just a bunch of cash piled in a bank account. I'm not talking about having a bunch of nice stuff. I am talking about I'm talking about your net worth, right? I'm talking about assets. I'm talking about equity. I'm talking about an investment portfolio. I'm talking about the things that create an abundance of opportunity and an abundance of options, right? And that is wealth, right? That's leverage. That means, say, I decided to shut down my business, right? I have an investment property that is creating returns. I have investments in the market that are creating returns. I have a day where I don't feel abundant, and or a week where I'm just not really manifesting things, or my law of attraction game is off. Doesn't matter, right? Yeah. Like my investments are still making money.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about. And I recommend starting, you know, there are a lot of different options. It can be really confusing when you jump in, and now there are more options than ever. And I want to say, you know, for the women out there, you know, there's a huge wealth gap, right? So for every dollar of wealth of your male counterpart, on average, across the board, women only have 35 cents of wealth. And that's when we're talking about that net worth, 35 cents. Mm-hmm. However, we outperform men across the board as investors, like one on an average, 1% to 0.5%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when we're talking about over a lifetime, right? When we're talking about your retirement, that is hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a lot of money. So I'm a fan of first starting really simply. And there's a rule, it's called like the 50-30-20 rule. So when you're creating your money plan, and which I do encourage before, because your money plan supports your vision for wealth, right? Your wealth plan, your wealth strategy. When you're creating your money plan, if you can get to a place where 50% of your income is going to your fixed expenses, 30% now is going to fun, leisure, living your life. You should enjoy your life. You should buy expensive lattes if you love them. You should buy great shoes. Right. You should definitely go on vacations with your girlfriends. It's like one of the most rewarding things in my life. Mm-hmm. And then 20% into investments and retirement. Mm. So I recommend starting if you are employed and you have say, an employer match in like a 401k, definitely do that. Definitely commit to at least your max match with that, because that's free money, right? They are contributing equally to you. And that's also counted. Your benefits package is kind of counted in your total compensation. So it's kind of like not cashing a check. I do recommend doing that. And you don't, I think there's a misconception that you have to have a lot of money to start investing, but you can start with like 50 to 100 bucks a month, right? But starting somewhere is really important, because the way compound interest works is over time, that curve of how much you're making becomes exponentially greater, because your interest starts earning interest, yeah. Right? So you are stacking money. So
it's like flip side of debt. It's like the other way where
exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Like this is the popcorn experience, right?
Yeah.
And that's, it's really lovely and it's really fun, and there's no amount that's too small. So starting with just a simple retirement account, like a 401k or an IRA, and seeing if you can commit to your max contribution. Mm-hmm. This year, the max IRA contribution is 6,000. Next year, I think it will go up to 6,500. And so that's like, it's a little over right now. It's like $500 a month. Next year, I think it'll be somewhere around, I can't do that math in my head,
yeah.
But like six something, close to seven. So if you can start there, that's a great place to start. There are also a lot of robo investors out there. So maybe you've seen a product like Stash or Elevest. These can be great. Pay attention to the fees though. And so the cool thing about robo investors is they kind of do everything for you. So you don't have
like,
to know.
Is it like an ETF or no?
Robo investors tend to, they have like groups of stocks. So typically like mutual funds or okay. whatever that they're trading.
I have Titan. I don't know if that's the yeah. same thing, but I know those Acorns and Titan. I don't know if those like those, it's yeah. similar
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, they pick the stuff for you, but pay attention yes. to what those fees are. Because again, well, 1% doesn't sound like a lot. Over time, that is a lot. So it depends on how much you're investing, whether those fees are worth it. And some of those robo investors or sort of like investing apps have much better fees than others. I actually think Elevest is really great. So that's an option as well. And the only difference is you don't really get to pick. I don't recommend, if you're just getting started, doing single stocks. And here's mm-hmm. why. When you are buying stock, you're basically taking one of your eggs, you know, one of your golden eggs, and you're putting it in one basket. But when you are, and this is important to know too, with a 401k or an IRA, is that you don't just put money in, you have to then invest that money, because otherwise it's like a savings account. And if you think about what inflation is right now, which is like mm-hmm. 8 to 10%, that money is losing money. Mm-hmm. So then you have to make sure you invest it. And I am, let's see, my 401k and my IRA, I do index funds or mutual funds, which mm-hmm. is a collection of stocks. So the S&P 500 is one you might have heard of. The NASDAQ is one you might have heard of. Just when you hear like financial jargon and they're like, the NASDAQ is up X points.
Right, right.
That just means like a collection of businesses. And that tends to outperform any single business. So I don't recommend jumping in to try to day trade. And this is actually why women tend to outperform men as investors across the board, is because they tend to pick, they're more risk aware, right? Not risk averse, which is a common myth and misconception, but more risk aware. Women tend to choose investments that are safer, a little bit more conservative, and that over the long run yield a higher return. So, mm-hmm. you know, jumping on GameStop or diving into crypto and NFTs can be really fun. Let that be your fun money. So if a portion of your investing money you want to start to play with and learn, great. Let that out of that 20%, let that be like 3%, right? And just see what happens, right? And know that you're going into that just like a weekend in Vegas. Because if that company, that single stock company goes under, so does your investment. But if you are invested in mutual funds or ETFs, then you have a different level. Your eggs are in many baskets and you're going to be solid. So that's where I recommend beginning.
Yeah. Such solid advice. And then what are your thoughts lastly on real estate? Because I know that the market right now is absolutely wild. So maybe for those listening that they're kind of in a place to maybe potentially invest in real estate or buy their first home, like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I think that this is really personal. And I think that often, you know, a lot of people think that like you, to be an adult and to have your shit together financially, you have to own a home. That is not true. It definitely depends on where you live. Like if you're trying to buy a home in, say, Seattle, San Francisco, New York City,
right? Good luck.
What it's going to cost you compared to what you're going to spend in rent and what that return is going to be is wild, right? Like a crappy house in San Francisco, like, or, you know, a crappy two-bedroom condo in Seattle is going to be like $1 million, maybe 900,000. I'm not sure what that market is today, but if you're somewhere where, you know, I bought my first home, I live in Kansas City, I'm in the Midwest. So the cost of living is a little bit lower and I bought a starter home and I bought it with the intention and understanding that I wasn't going to be there for forever. And that I would turn that into my first rental property and that home gets to build equity. So it can be a great tool for building wealth, but it depends on where you are and the market you're in. I think it's really personal because if that is going to make you more money in the market, then maybe your plan is to rent and spend the extra money that you would spend on the mortgage and, the homeowner's insurance and all of the surprise things that happen, like your furnace breaking down and, which happened, you know, the first month I was in my first home was like, I had to replace the furnace, the water heater and the HVAC, like all in the same sweep. And it was like, wow, there is over $15,000 in financing that I did not calculate. And I just bought a house and I wanted to buy furniture and that's not happening for a while, you know? So it really depends. But there are also ways that you can, after sort of just that standard retirement, because I'm a fan of diversification. I'm a fan of having multiple different types of investments and they can serve you in different ways. But having just a really reliable one in place first. So get that in place first, and then you can look. There are also ways now to jump into real estate investments where you're just buying a fractional share and then you're getting paid dividends. So when I look at investments, I look at a couple different things. I look for, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as somebody who is passionate about building wealth, I'm either looking for an investment that can cash flow for me now, right? Or I'm looking at an investment that long-term is going to build tangible wealth. So when I buy, a rental property, it depends on the property, right? With real estate. So that the single family home, my first house that I converted into a rental property, that property doesn't cash flow super high now, right? It pays the mortgage. And then I think it's, I don't know, $300-$500 a month additional. That all goes into an account in case stuff goes wrong. Right now, however, it's paying down equity. And at the same time, the value of property is increasing. And on my taxes for that business and that LLC, I can depreciate the home. So when I sell it later on, I'm selling it or after it's that 15-year note pays itself off, it's all cash flow. Or I have this thing that I can sell and get a big payday. So that's one type of investment, right? A long-term investment game is I'm building a big portfolio of wealth that I can draw on later for, you know, Cougar Hannah, who wants to sit by the pool and not work, right? Or when I'm a grandma or whatever.
Yeah.
Then, so that's one type of investment. There are other investments that are cash flowing now. So in real estate, that might be like a multifamily property. So like a rental property where it has a higher cash flow, but not necessarily that much of a difference in terms of resale value, or, you know, an investment that is paying dividends to you.
And I love what they were talking about this, because I feel like these kinds of conversations, like a lot of the times, like it's mostly men, especially like, you know, when someone get married, like technically it's the husband that like kind of has these conversations and the wife's kind of out of it. And I think it's so important that like women are involved in these conversations, like know what's going on with your money, like just stay active. And even if you're not maybe necessarily the one handling the finances, I think being aware of it is so beneficial. Cause the truth is like, you have no idea like where life is going to lead. I actually saw the other day, Kris Jenner, funny enough, she was saying how like when she was married to Robert Kardashian, like she had no idea what was happening with any of the money. And then when they got divorced, it was the first time where she was like, okay, wait a second. Like, I actually need to know what's going on in my home and how things are being paid. And that's when she really became liberated and look who she is today. It's really important. But, and lastly, you know, just kind of talking about entrepreneurship, because this is what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. Like, what advice would you give to people that are maybe doing the corporate thing right now? And maybe they want to like venture off and start a business or something from a financial perspective? Like, what advice would you give someone when they're like just starting out?
Yeah. So what I would say is don't quit your job immediately. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. And statistically, entrepreneurs who start as a side hustle or keep a stream of revenue from a job or from freelancing or for something while they start to build their business, stay in business longer and over in the long run, are considerably more successful and less likely to fail. So resource yourself, right? If you've got a vision, if you've got a mission, if you've got something you want to create in the world, you have a responsibility to that mission. And resourcing yourself is giving yourself the best shot at that being successful. So start on the side. From the jump, know your numbers and have a plan for your money, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just, especially when it's a side hustle, or if your business is cash flowing high, it's really easy to just kind of like money in, money out, and not pay attention. I promise you are losing money, and you're not getting the real reward for your effort if you're not tracking those numbers. So start slow, pay attention to your numbers. And then I want you to think about, as an entrepreneur, I want you to think about investments in sort of three lanes. The first is investing in yourself and your skill set. When you invest in your skill set, you're increasing your earning potential. The second is investing in your business. When you are investing in your business, you are intentionally taking that earning potential and using it to create cash flow. And then the third is taking that cash flow from your business and then investing it into wealth building opportunities. So not wealth building opportunities like a digital course, right? Wealth building opportunities like assets, equity, or passive income.
Yeah.
Right. So things that will help you build tangible wealth and net worth. And then you're taking that cash flow and you're turning that cash flow into wealth. And for entrepreneurs, your business is an incredible tool for building wealth. You know, the tax code is more favorable for small businesses vastly than it is for employees.
Yeah. I think you said something too just now, because I feel like when you watch shows like Shark Tank or whatever, they'll be like, oh, you have to put all your eggs in one basket. And I want to see that you're going for it. But I think, like, in my opinion, that's not always like the best case. I get that there are situations where like maybe you're at a crossroads and you kind of do have to pick one lane. But I think when you're starting out though, like you do want to have that backup. And I think slowly building that wealth, so when you have that security and you're in a comfortable position, maybe that's when you're ready to take that next step. But I feel like I've seen videos before where people, they go to venture off and do their own thing and then they completely fail. And then they have to like go look for a job. And then you put yourself in an uncomfortable position. So I think preparing yourself beforehand is just, you know, obviously the better way to go.
Yeah. Going for it doesn't mean putting yourself in a position where it's sink or swim. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I think that's such a misunderstanding of what going for it means. Going for it means like, I'm going to set myself the fuck up to make this work.
Yes.
Right. Or if I do want to quit this job and go full time, I'm going to make sure that the business is already bringing in income, that I understand my business model and how that works, that I have a plan for how that's going to replace my income, and that I have a certain amount of cash set aside that's going to support me through that transition.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Hannah, just to bring it back to you to wrap up, what are some of your personal and professional goals in the next year or so?
Yeah, in the next year, I have two courses I want to put out. So I have a course that I want to put out that's basically teaching you how to retire as a millionaire. That'll be all of the wealth essentials. So regardless of where you are financially, that's coming. And then I'll probably do sometime in 2023, a higher level wealth strategy course for entrepreneur, where we're talking about cash flow, leverage, tax strategy, and using your business as a tool to build tangible wealth. And then I also have, so those are some goals. Right now I'm doing some due diligence for a third business that I'll probably start next month. And that's more of like a cash flowing business. And then also before the end of the year, I intend to purchase my first multifamily property. Amazing. So somewhere between 2 and 6 doors, just depending on the property. So those are some of my own wealth building goals. And again, it's about the wealth of opportunity, the wealth of options that provides, the ability to spend 2 weeks, you know, with no phone and no laptop on the beach with my family, the option to say yes to things that matter to me. We do a huge wealth event every year that's free. You know, that's something that my business gives me the ability to do, because it's a ton of work, it's a ton of resources, and we give it away. And that's an expensive thing to do, but because my business has put me in a position to be able to do that, I can do work that has an impact that matters to me, that meets people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Well, Hannah, women like you, and I don't mean this in a cliche way, like really do make the world a better place. And the fact that you're educating people and you're like really a source of hope, because you were in a situation that I feel like so many are afraid to admit that they're in. And so the fact that you're transparent about your story is doing more work than, you know, or maybe you do realize, but I appreciate you. And I thank you for being with us today. And if you're ever in New York, let me know, and probably will never be in Kansas City. But
my God, I will. I was just in Philly and Jersey. So,
okay, there you go. So hopefully we meet up in person, but thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And
go ahead.
I would love to share for anyone listening about our event. It's called the Leadwell Summit. It's October 17th through the 21st. It's 5 days. It's free. And the best financial educators, female financial educators in the online space will be there. We'll be talking about everything from paying yourself as an entrepreneur to credit, to paying off student loan debt, to investing and beyond. We have, you know, the Dow Janes, we have Tori Dunlap, the financial feminist, we have Tanya Rapley, finance, financial trauma, all of it.
So, so good. I will put all that in the description of this episode. Yeah. You guys can check out and sign up. But thank you so much, Hannah. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, guys, if you're hearing this, that means you made it to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening. And I hope that episode was just as educational and informative for you as it was for me. With that said, please be sure to subscribe so you're the first to hear about new episodes. Rate 5 stars and leave a comment. It means the world and helps my growing podcast. And I love getting feedback from you guys. With that, all of Hannah's info will be in the description of this episode, including the Leadwell Summit that takes place October 17th to the 21st. Be sure to sign up. It is free. And there's so much great information that's there. And I will also put all of the little links that she mentioned in the episode so you guys have more information about those. And with that, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Stay healthy, stay safe, and get that bag, girl. Oh, God. Bye.